You're listening to the Word Slinger Podcast, episode 106, Designing a Life with Lisa Drozdov. This episode of the Word Slinger Podcast is brought to you by the audiobook edition of Coelho Medallion. You can find Coelho Medallion on Audible and use your Audible credit, or get Coelho Medallion for free when you go to audibletrial.com/wordslinger.
It's the Word Slinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand, write your book, redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Hey everybody, this is Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger. Thanks so much for tuning in. I am really glad you're here. I'm glad I'm here. This has actually been a great week for me. A lot of things have happened. So just the short list. A couple of weeks ago, my dog Minnie injured her foot, and it was not horrible, but it was painful for her, and so it took a couple of weeks to heal. So I've been able to take her to doggy daycare. My wife and I have a routine of taking her to daycare a couple times a week, mostly to give me a chance to be able to get out without having her in a backpack or something on my Vespa, on my scooter, or having to get Uber. You know, it makes it easier when she's being taken care of elsewhere and I can go right from Starbucks or, you know, whatever. I can go have lunch with a friend or something like that. So it just makes it easier to have a life outside the RV during working hours. You know, normally I just take her with me. If I'm just going somewhere to just have fun, take a walk, or, you know, even just kind of touring around the city or small towns where we are or whatever, normally I can take her in a backpack and it works out just fine. People actually even like her. She's a registered service dog, so don't ask. That was one thing. We also had to take the RV in for some repairs, some service work. And we're kind of fighting with the service company. We found out that the service extended service plan that we purchased is like the lowest rated among all consumer report groups on the planet. So they keep denying things, keep making claims like, I had one of the fenders on the RV, something happened and it broke free from the screws that were holding it in. The fiberglass broke around the screws and it was just flapping free. So I had to tape it on while we were making a trip back from Florida. And that's bad. But the service company denied the claim, first saying that the screws backed out, so that was an upkeep issue. And I sent pictures of the screws still in the frame, still there, and saying, not an upkeep issue. But they denied a lot of things like that. They denied a lot of the little things I wanted fixed as upkeep issues. The windshield's rubber gasket flying off. Never in the history of driving. I've been driving since I was 16. I've never had a car or truck or any vehicle that had the rubber gasket just fly off of the windshield. So I'm not sure what upkeep I was supposed to do there. But fighting it, and winning some battles, some not. But, got to take the wins. But anyway, they had the RV for a week or two. No, not a week or two, just a week, which was really inconvenient for me and Kara, because we do live in it full time. We had to stay with her folks, who are out, they're amazing people, and I'm not just saying that to stay in good graces. The running joke in Kara's family is that I get along better with her folks and her brother and sister-in-law than I do with her. So just do that what you will. But anyway, that's been part of the week. We're back now for the past week. We've been back, settling in. We're going to have to take it back to the RV dealership, as of, Monday the 13th. And then I fly out to San Francisco, for the San Francisco Writers Conference. So if you're going to be at SFWC on 2017, the 2017 event. I'm going to be there. I'm on like three panels, and I'm there representing Draft Digital, and I'm talking about my stuff. I'm talking, you know, there's going to be a lot going on, so I'd be happy to chat with you if you're around. So if you're in the San Francisco area, come on by. I'll be there from, I'm arriving on the 14th, evening of the 14th, and then I'll leave on that following Sunday. So most of that time I'm going to be in the conference, but there's a gap in there or two if you want to grab a drink or something at the hotel or whatever. So look me up. And if you happen to have one of my books, bring it by. I'll sign it for you. If you don't happen to have one of my books, go buy one of my books. Bring it by, and I'll sign it for you. Yeah, I'm just kidding. But in other news, now this is exciting. I pushed the button yesterday, and let me explain what I mean by that. You may have heard of this. There's a group out there called Masterclass, and they get all kinds of celebrity, I guess, representatives of a certain field to do a course, basically. And they're mostly just talking to the camera, and there are little workbooks that I think the Masterclass folks build. There's one for Chef Ramsay. There's one for Aaron Sorkin, you know, but there's one for James Patterson. And the course is like $90. If you're an author or want to be an author, if you want to write fiction, this isn't a bad way to go. You should pop the $90 and learn from someone who's done what you're trying to do. I will confess, there's not a ton in there that I didn't already know, wasn't already putting in practice. You know, there weren't a lot of aha enlightenment moments necessarily, but it is just, there's something about seeing how someone does the work. Even if you're not going to do it exactly the way they do, there's just something about seeing how other masters of a craft do the work. And the fact that he generously shared all this and has acted as mentor to so many people, I think that's just fantastic. So I think it's worth the $90. Now, the reason I got it, though, the reason I got into the class was last year when they ran the course for the first time, there was a contest, and he picks a single winner by the end. But there are, you know, several people benefit from this. But the contest is to be a co-author with Patterson. And if you've looked at any of his work, the majority of his work is co-authored. Like he maybe, I'm not entirely certain. I haven't looked at the part of the course that tells you about how he collaborates. I confess, I've not seen the entire course, but I'm going through it again now, and I'm going to do the whole thing. And the reason is, the contest is on again. So the terms of this thing were, you need to write a hook that's only 100 words or less. And if you've listened to me on other podcasts or whatever about copywriting and that sort of thing for authors, a hook is essentially a log line. It's maybe a little more developed than that. It's giving the premise of the story. And it is a hook. I mean, it is that, like, why do readers want to read this? What's going to make them pick it up, open the cover, read page one, and keep reading? So that was the first part of the assignment. The second part was to submit a sample chapter, and that needed to be 1,000 words or less. It took me a bit because the writing of this stuff is easy, okay. Spending time on it wasn't the problem. It was coming up with an idea that I wasn't already using in another book. So I had one sort of on reserve. And as I have grown to do, I took Minnie for a walk to think things over. And by the time I came back, I was fired up to write my sample. I got everything in place. So it took a couple of weeks, but I've got it, right? So I hit send on that. And by the way, I want to thank Nick Thacker. I want to thank my wife. I want to thank Honore Corder. I want to thank my friend Bob Beaver. These people are They helped me. They looked at my hook. They looked at my, you know, a couple of them looked at my sample chapter, gave me some great feedback, and I feel really confident about this. Now, you're probably asking yourself, like, because I'm pretty well known as the indie publishing guy, you know? I mean, this is my industry. This is what I do. So the truth is I'm interested in this as an opportunity because it will take me to a new level that I've wanted to reach my entire career. And really it's kind of an accelerator. Like, it's not about being indie or traditionally published at this point. It's about how do I accelerate the progress that I'm making so that I reach as many readers as I can, as far and wide as I can, and have the lifestyle I'm looking for. So I'm trying to find that path that leads me to the type of author career that I always dreamed of having. I love indie publishing. I support everyone who does it. I build things that help people in that. I encourage people to do it. It is, to me, it's one of the most empowering things I've done with my life, and I know it works for others this way. There's just this opportunity now for me to step forward and maybe take a slightly different path, learn new things, challenge myself in new ways. So will I win the competition? No idea. Maybe, maybe not. I'm praying that I will, and I've asked other people, and I'm asking you to pray that I will. But if I do, those are the terms that I'm going into it with. It's a new challenge. It's a new opportunity. It's a new way to look at this craft that I love. It's a new way to serve my purpose and serve the people, the readers, and serve my God and serve everyone that I'm trying to serve with my stories. That's the goal, okay? If I don't win it, I continue on and I look for the next opportunity. So, but I'm very excited about it, and it is part of this design of my life, this purposeful life that I'm leading. And I think that's there's some value there for everybody listening. So if you've got any questions about that sort of thing, just feel free to email me, hop on wordslingerpodcast.com, contact me, whatever. Now, we're 12 minutes in, and I hate that I've gone this long because I want you to get right to this interview. So thanks for hanging in there. And now I'm going to let you listen in on my conversation with Lisa, and I think you're going to enjoy this. So stick around after, and we'll do a quick wrap-up, and God bless you. We'll see you on the other side. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, and today I'm talking with, and it's Lisa, not Liza.
Yeah.
Lisa Drozdov, and we had this conversation beforehand. That's why I'm making the joke. We also had some technical issues beforehand, which... if you listen to the show for any length of time, you know I'm a warts and all kind of guy. I will reveal all the nitty-gritty details behind the scenes, but we're on track. So Lisa is the author of Design My Life, and she's got a very interesting bio. She was the executive producer for Holmes Makes It Right, which I am a fan of the show and of Mike Holmes himself. That was one of the highest rated shows on HGTV and DIY, and well-deserved too, so... Good work, Lisa.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I can't take all the credit.
No, go ahead. No one's going to care. Just take all the credit
no
you want.
Care. I bet Mike would care, actually.
Yeah, Mike would probably care. Him being the stickler for quality and truth in advertising that he is, I bet he would probably take issue. So tell us, you know, I want to hear all about Design My Life. That sounds like that's going to go in some interesting places. So why don't we start right there? What's the premise behind Design My Life?
Well, Design My Life it's a novel, it's fiction, but it's based on my many years' experience working in lifestyle television production. Uh-huh. You know, I've worked with Mike Holmes on, you know, some of his series, as well as some more designery ones like Color Confidential, Divine Design, and competition shows. And, you know, it's a glimpse behind the scenes, as you said, warts and all, of that segment of television. It's a very popular genre. Many, many, many people watch these aspirational and inspirational TV shows about home design and renovation. And
right.
I think this is a glimpse behind the scenes to see what the reality is behind reality television.
Yeah, you know, my wife and I went through we're still sort of addicted to them. I mean, we went through this period where we were just completely addicted to home improvement shows and that sort of thing. And it fooled me into thinking it would be just a simple, you know, Saturday, spend the Saturday putting in a new floor in the house. That ought to be done in a few hours. And it literally took me 3 years to put in that floor. So
I am not surprised. Well, you know, these weekend warriors, and they make it look so easy, and it's so tempting because the before and the afters, they look so beautiful. But, of course, television editing, and, you know, we don't really see what happens and how long it takes to tear something out, to order materials, to have them incorrect, have to have them reordered. You know, meanwhile, you're living in drywall with no floor down and dust everywhere and drop sheets everywhere. Yeah, it's hell. It is renovation hell is not something that I really wish on anybody. It's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had my fill. So I'm interesting. It's interesting to me though that you chose to write this as fiction. So what was sort of the driving force? Why not do a tell all kind of book? I mean, why do it as fiction?
Oh, you know, I don't really want to name names, and I wouldn't want to tarnish anybody's reputation. So I think it made more sense to fictionalize it. Okay. And a lot of these stories have not come from one single source.
Right.
You know, they've been experienced by me, but on a number of productions. So it makes a lot more sense to me. It made a lot more sense to protect the guilty as well as the innocent and fictionalize the whole thing. You know, I haven't worked just on one series, so it wouldn't be fair to sort of do that. And it would limit my opportunity.
Right, yeah.
You know, yeah.
So you, okay, but what was the sort of drive, what was the sort of final nail, I guess, or the final event that made you sit up and say, I really need to write a book about this stuff?
Oh, well, you know, this book, the idea for the book was brewing for a number of years, you know, oh gosh, probably since, you know, 2005 or six or even before that, because a lot of the time, you know, I would get angry at the deception that I'll call it deception that I think is perpetuated by the networks and by the producers and by the hosts and by the production companies, not just you know, with the ease or the purported ease of doing a renovation, but just the whole thing. You know, some of these people aren't real. They're not the real deal.
Right.
You have hosts who claim to be experts when they're not. You have products that are promoted when they're not the right, you know, they're not actually very good. You know, the whole system is somewhat corrupt.
Yeah.
It can be. And I find that irritating. Plus, the whole concept, you know, a lot of these shows, they're designed or they're produced to be emotionally, to hook you, to hook the viewer. Now, it's not just a practical DIY show like you'd see on This Old House. They're trying to yank your emotional chains. So they manipulate the storyline. They craft these scenarios that are artificial. You know, they make up scenarios wherein people are ill or they're, you know, coming out of surgery or there's a tragedy. And that emotional manipulation is really dishonest. And so that's the sort of thing that cumulatively over time, it really got to me, I'll be honest. And I got sick of it. I got quite sick of it.
I can imagine. I'm just trying, you know, I worked in film and television for a while, mostly documentary stuff. And it's kind of, it's different because we really are kind of digging in on the actual story there. Right. And I do understand the drive to find the emotional strings and tug on those, but
yes,
it does become manipulative after a while.
But you also want to be, you know, have a moral stance and you want to be ethical about it. Some of this is quite, you know, it's kind of insidious because it is about ratings, obviously, and it's about trying to make your show popular, but it's being popular for the wrong reasons.
Right.
And some of that, you know, it strikes me, it's fundamentally dishonest. And, you know, a lot of the hosts, you know, some of whom I worked for and some of whom I just have met, they're actors.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, and it doesn't sit right with me. You know, it irritated me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to call it out.
You know, I remember a few years ago, sort of in the early days of like HGTV, there was a show and one of the guys, I think the premise was he finds a house for a couple, very common premise, right? He finds a house for a couple, remodels it, And then they buy the home, you know, or vice versa. I mean, they buy the home, he remodels it, and everyone lives happily ever after. And then there was this big revelation that he actually was never buying the homes. The couples were always friends he knew, someone he was personally connected to who weren't actually buying the home. He was actually going in and essentially stealing homes for sale, remodeling them for the purpose of this show, and then moving on.
Well, you know, I don't know that show, but it doesn't surprise me in the least, because at the end of the day, it's really no different than Hollywood making a movie, right?
Right.
The goal is it's supposed to be an entertaining 30 minutes or 60 minutes of television that they can sell advertising to support.
Right.
And the truth, and I'm making air quotes, you can't see them on the radio, the truth
I heard them.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, producers would say that's not relevant. It's not, doesn't matter that it's not true. We've made a show, and maybe you've got some good takeaway information. You've learned about a renovation, or you've got some good ideas of how to redo your bathroom or how to make money by flipping your house. But, you know, it does seem a bit creepy when you hear these stories that I believe are true. Some of them, you know, people, it's all faked, and, you know, friends get their houses flipped for free and renovated. It's distasteful.
Yeah.
It's distasteful.
Yeah.
But, you know, the book, the novel isn't only about this tell-all behind-the-scenes expose. It's really the story of the central character, mm-hmm. and it's her growth, and it's her development. You know, she starts out as this underling. She's sort of, she's the slave, for lack of a better word,
okay.
to the star of the TV series. And, you know, she's a ghostwriter, and she's a ghost designer, and she's a slave behind the scenes, and she does all of the work to keep the star looking good and propping up the star, and she gets no credit, and she gets no acknowledgement, and in fact gets treated pretty shabbily all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's her growth of her character before she realizes that, you know, A, I don't want to do this anymore, B, this isn't right, and C, when am I going to step out of this star's shadow,
yeah.
stand on my own, and take credit for my own work and my own talent.
Yeah.
So it's really her story, couched in this environment of behind-the-scenes lifestyle television expose.
Yeah. So, okay, that's what genre would you say that book falls into then?
I call it, you know, woman's fiction, really.
Okay.
You know, some people would call it chick lit, I guess that's a phrase,
chick-lit,
but it's, you know, there is a bit of romance in it, and I think it's funny.
Yeah.
You know, when I wrote it, I was laughing out loud, and, you know, some of my readers, you know, have read it, and they think it's funny. It's kind of snarky, kind of mean, a bit edgy,
yeah.
but that's my temperament, so that's,
sort
of. You know, one person read it and said, none of your characters are very nice. I thought, well, yeah, have you worked in television? Nobody's very nice.
That's true. That's true. I was very nice. That was very nice. You
well,
seem very
you're
nice.
You're not on television anymore, may
That's
I
true.
Point out.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. So maybe all the nice folks go running at some point.
That's right. They can't take it anymore. They got to leave. It's the price of your soul. Now I'm exaggerating, obviously. But, you know, it is edgy, and it's funny, and it's quirky. And I, you know, the characters, I live with them for a long time, and many of them, of course, are based on real people.
Yeah.
In fact, in the process of starting to promote the book, I reached out to a number of lifestyle celebrities who I know and have worked with over the years, and they were reluctant, some of them, to promote it.
Right.
Because they, you know, they were afraid they'd get into trouble that with the network or with, you know, that somehow someone would scold them. And in one of them, and I will not name names, actually asked me if the character of Julian was based on him.
Oh.
Which,
was
it's
it,
not.
It's
I'm
not. Was it at least, was it partially based on him?
No, not even at all. In fact, we were having this conversation, he and I, on the phone when he was telling me no. And he was saying, you know, is the character, you know, based on me? And I, of course, in my mind was thinking of Sandy, the main bad guy, the female lead,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking, what does this guy think, that he's Sandy? Well, no, of course not. I'm saying to him, no, Sandy's a girl. Why would you think it's based on you? And he's trying to suggest that he's the character of Julian, the hot contractor, I may
right.
say, is based on him. It's like we had this very complicated and very confusing conversation. No. And the answer is no, it's not based on him. Totally
yeah.
not.
Okay. Well, good. I imagine that would complicate things a little, because you do, since you have connections in that world and you've worked with these people, and any stories you tell, the thing about working in TV is that you can tell this story, this weird, quirky thing that happened behind the scenes on this show, but chances are it happened on a whole bunch of other shows too.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Everyone's going to see it.
Yeah, it's true. It's not the most unusual situations. Many of the same sort of things happen time and again. The names are changed, the locations are different, but it's not that unusual. A lot of this stuff happens all the time. You're quite right.
Yeah. So I imagine it's kind of tough to avoid people assuming that certain things were based on them or whatever. Have you had any legal problems at all? Are people trying to?
Oh no, it's fiction. Fiction, and there's nobody that is in any way recognizable. No. I'd be very surprised.
So the second protagonist, Hike Molms. I'm just kidding.
Mike, I told Mike about this show, this book, and he wished me well. So no. He's not in it in any way.
Totally have to help me get Mike Holmes on the show now, by the way.
I do? Well, oh, yeah. It's not that hard.
It's the cost of being on the show. You have to just ask Mike Holmes to be on the show. That's all I'm asking. I'm asking you out loud publicly so that you feel shamed into doing it. That's why. No.
Oh, it's not. I, if you want, I will send you an email with his publicist's contact.
I'll do that.
No problem.
I'll do that. That's interesting. And, I've been connected to numerous celebrities over the years, and it's interesting how a lot of them are very down-to-earth in private. And then when they get into public, there's some shift that happens. Like, I guess they become more guarded. That's the way it tends to work.
Well, there's a persona. No, yeah. I think that's fair. Anybody who lives in the public life, whether they're a politician or an actor or a person, who works on a TV show, they do have to protect their personal image, and hide their secrets and bury them. But also, so they have a front. They put on an act.
Right.
It's like stepping into a little costume when you go out the door.
Right.
And I think that is, some of it is they're playing a character. They're playing a role of someone who's on TV, and some of it is protecting their inner self so that they don't expose that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, and I imagine that is great fodder for fiction of this type.
I would think so, sure. I mean, if, some of these people are, I think, not very pleasant in real life, but they present as lovely to their fans. They're able to shine it on. They're able to be pleasant and endearing and appear genuine, and that's great, because I guess it perpetuates the whole concept of their brand.
Yeah.
And, hell, we would rather have somebody being pleasant than somebody being a jerk. So
true. So, okay. How connected are you now to the industry? You're currently like the, and I don't know, it's Hortus TV, right?
Sure. when I left the Holmes Group, I launched a new streaming service. It's called Hortus TV. And it's available in Canada only now, but it will be also in North America as of January.
Cool.
And it's like the Netflix for gardeners. It's devoted to gardening shows. So anybody who's a passionate gardener will realize or already knows that there's been a real shortage of gardening shows on TV for a decade now, at least. Yeah. They've all sort of dropped out because I guess they fell out of favor with the networks or advertisers. There's a lot of rationale that I won't bore you with. But I saw a niche opportunity here to launch a service that's specialized, subscription-based, ad-free, and it caters only to gardeners, people who want to watch gardening shows. So I've licensed content from around the world. It's primarily from Britain because they produce beautiful gardening shows, beautiful stuff in HD and glorious content, great hosts, really interesting, entertaining, inspirational, aspirational. And so that's what I do now. It's fun. It's I sort of made it up myself. I built it, and now I'm letting people see it.
That's interesting. And why gardening in particular?
Oh, I'm a gardener. I've been a passionate gardener since my youth. since I was a kid.
You know, I envy that in some ways. I don't know. I'm too much of a... I'm an inside guy. I'm a technology and, you know, sit in the air conditioning guy. And I, but when I look at like a well done, well cultivated garden, it is very inspiring. And there is this country boy part of me that wants to stop tinkering with, you know, podcasts and everything else and go out there and get my hands in the soil. But I haven't quite graduated to that yet.
Well, I mean, gardening is really nurturing. I believe it sustains the spirit, yeah. And I believe it's really good for the soul. But you're about to be a nomad and take off across America in an RV.
True.
You can't be a gardener.
That's true. That's true. Look, this is America. We can do it all here.
I guess you could have a green roof on the RV and grow something up there.
Possibly. No, you know, I mean, eventually, my wife and I, you know, we had a home, we had a house, and we sold that, and we lived in an apartment briefly, and now we'll be in the RV. But the goal is to find, you know, like a plot of land somewhere that we really love, and that'll be home, you know. So mm-hmm. I'll eventually mm-hmm. have the opportunity to do some gardening, I guess. But we'll just have to see.
For now, you travel, and then you'll put down some roots somewhere. And
yeah, that's right.
Sure, you'll grow. You'll grow vegetables or roses or whatever you want to grow, and it's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah. So this Hortus TV. I mean, did you like test this idea first, or just you just launched it hoping that people would find it and it turned out to be okay, or how did that work out?
Well, it's early. It's how is it working out? It's I just launched it. I mean, I did some, you know, modest market research, but it really right. was something I launched out of a passion and from my gut. And it just struck me that this is a completely unserved market. So I did my research. I launched it in a modest way in Canada. And now as it's going well, I mean, it's obviously technology based, like, you know, your yeah. podcasts are. So you have to make sure it works.
Yeah.
And the proof of concept is there, and as a business, and so now I'm, like I said, I'm expanding into the U.S. market, which is much larger. There's a lot more people in America,
right?
Presumably, a lot more gardeners, and then we'll see where we go from there.
I think it's very cool. I think I wish you well on it. I think it has a great opportunity to do well in the U.S. But that's interesting to me. Just the process of you building the channel building the network is interesting to me. Beyond
well,
the gardening
it has been.
Yeah.
It has been interesting. It's and friends of mine have thought, well, if this works, why wouldn't you do another specialty thing like with wine or
right.
something? I thought, well, sure, absolutely. I mean,
well,
the way television, the landscape, yes, and the way the landscape of television is changing so dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
Time was we had to force tune and watch certain shows at certain times. Then we were able to record them. Then we could
yes.
PVR them and TiVo them and forget the commercials. And now, of course, everyone's streaming, and no one watches TV in a conventional way anymore.
Right.
It's just sort of not done. So it's all breaking up. Things that used to be commonplace, like the family watching around Sunday night watching Ed Sullivan, that's gone. It
yeah.
doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
So it's. I think we have to rethink how you deliver the sort of content and shows that people want to see and give it to them so they can watch it when they want to watch it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that the landscape of television and entertainment has changed dramatically in just the past 5 years alone. By the way, I totally hold my hand up. I predicted this, by the way, folks. I'm just saying.
Oh, did you?
I said it would go exactly like this. Because where else can you have? Because, you know, we have specialized networks. Look what happened, though, on cable and satellite. We have specialized networks for, you know, home and garden television, DIY, and history, and all these things. But they get bastardized, right? No one... They can't have enough programming to hold the interest of an audience for that long, 24 hours a day. So they had to bring in, you know, outside programming that has little to nothing to do with that topic. But if you have these networks online, you can have specialized content. You can have an all gardening channel. You can have an all, you know, balloon shaping, you know, whatever programming
you want. Absolutely. It's less expensive to keep it running online.
Right.
You couldn't afford, because of the cost of content and you know, broadcasting so horrifically expensive, and you can't afford, you know how expensive it is to make a TV
right.
show. So in order to make them, you would how many advertisers would you have in order to sustain the costs of having an all-gardening television program, you know, on Comcast or whatever? It just, it's not possible. But online, it's much more modest. The costs are fewer. And it's doable. And you're quite right. I mean, and advertisers are running away.
Yeah.
They aren't seeing a return on their investment by advertising on ABC, NBC, Fox, or whatever.
Right.
So they're fleeing and trying to find other ways to connect with their markets. So, you know, the networks are starving.
Yeah.
They haven't got the money coming in to keep the lights on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, I talked to Michael Milligan. MCM is his author name. It's his everything name, really. But he's a screenwriter. He's an author. He does a lot of children's television in Canada, but he's developing a series for Netflix. So this topic keeps coming up. and I initially, my first series of books actually was centered around, I was going to produce a web series. This was before Netflix was doing streaming, that sort of thing. But so this is a big topic of interest for me. So I think it's very cool what you're doing there. I know it's sort of off topic from your book, but I mean, I think it ties back because of the TV aspect.
Well, I'm happy to talk about it, so don't you worry. I'm very proud of it. And, you know, it's exciting when you come up with an idea, and then you make it happen, and it manifests, and there it is. It's real. It's like, what? Look at that. I made that.
So, I'm very curious, by the way, because where is your book selling? I mean, it says, on your site, it says you can find it on Amazon, but I couldn't find it. Is it just Amazon in Canada or something?
It hasn't launched yet. It hasn't launched yet.
Oh, that's
yes,
it.
Yes.
That's it.
It should have been live like now, but there's been a bit of a delay with the quality check and the, you know, QC stuff.
Trust me, I understand.
Yeah. So I mean,
understand.
I had thought it was supposed to be like 2 weeks ago, and then there's all these weird hiccups. So maybe by the time this is live after you've edited it, it'll be available on my website.
You got a few
It'll
weeks.
Be on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBooks, Kobo,
okay,
as well as in print.
Okay. I would be remiss as the, because I am actually the director of marketing for Draft Digital. I would be remiss if I did not say I can totally help you get into a whole bunch of different markets. So you,
I'm with Draft Digital, dude.
Oh, you are? Oh, there you go. Boom. All right.
Draft Digital,
man,
for
that's,
sure.
That's marketing right there. I just got you on board before I even talked to you. That's awesome.
Yeah, I was already on board. No, I'm working with Draft Digital. Sorry.
Awesome.
For iBook,
that's fantastic.
Sony, something, something. Yes. I did my own to Kobo and to Amazon, but the rest is all through Draft Digital. I did not go the Smashwords route.
So have you talked to or dealt with Mark LaFave at all, or Ed Kobo, or does that name ring any bells?
The name rings bells because I was speaking with a woman who knows him, but I haven't dealt with him personally, no.
Okay. Well, he's an amazing guy. He's probably the nicest guy I've ever known in my entire life. Like he's very tall, and he's very imposing looking sometimes, and then he's just this big teddy bear of a guy. You know, so if you do,
so what should I do? I should call him up and say hi.
You should say Kevin Tomlinson says say howdy, and he will. He might give you a little tour of Kobo there. Actually,
outside of Toronto. I'm just outside of Toronto. I should, and I can't remember. I was talking to some. Maybe it wasn't Rachel. It was another woman who was helping me with deployment on the ebook, and she suggested that they have some kind of a newsletter or something at Kobo that perhaps.
Yeah.
I could get connected with them, but I haven't gone there yet, Kevin. It's early days.
Early days. All right. Well, we're going to get you all fixed up. I can tell
right
now. You talk to me.
I will. You got the hookups. You know, it's funny. Something like launching a streaming service on television, that came together pretty seamlessly. My timing was on and everything worked, whereas I've had these hiccups with the self-publishing that I didn't anticipate. You know, it's like, what?
Well, you know what
it is?
Well, first of all, you worked in TV and you understand all the nuances and all the intricacies and, you know, it's all programmed into your brain. You've got that stuff, right? And then you get to the self-publishing industry, and it's not quite as complex, in my opinion, but there are plenty of there are plenty of dead end avenues you can be diverted onto.
Oh, just put it that way. I think I'm stuck on some of those. You're absolutely right. Like things I did not anticipate, but you know, I'm hoping. But by the end of what this week, yeah. All will be well. But let's fingers crossed. It's only a month late.
Yeah, no, you're good. You're good. Whatever. Month late. You know, if you were in traditional publishing, you wouldn't see that book on a shelf for like a year. So I think you're all right. You're going to do all right.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. You know, part of the process, you know, obviously, the dream of every writer, and I've always wanted to write, I wanted to be a writer, I think. And I took many delays and, you know, lots of things got in the way. And I tried to have an agent, you know, and everyone wants to go the traditional route because that's sort of the approved method. You get an agent, you get a publisher, they take care of everything, and there you go. You go to a book signing and life is great. Mm-hmm. But it didn't work out for me that way. And I thought, well, screw this. I'm not going to put this book in a drawer. I want it out there.
Right.
So I thought, why not? I can publish this. And you can. You can totally do it.
Yeah.
You can get a book designer. It's got a beautiful jacket. I'm very happy with how the book turned out. I had worked with great people. Damon Zah is the name of the book designer in New York. Lovely. And it all came together. The only hiccups, delays, and glitches are all entirely my fault because of lack of experience, as you said.
Yeah.
And the next time, it'll be seamless, she said.
I'm sorry.
So, yes, this is the plan. It'll be seamless.
Listen, I've published 30 plus books at this point, and none of them have been seamless, so
get
ready.
Oh, that's sad. Oh, dear.
Well, but that's the thing. Well, the great thing about indie publishing, just like any other business, really, but I mean, every experience is different. Every time you roll something out, it's different, and you learn something new every time. And it's a kind of beautiful experience in my opinion. Like I love the whole thing. I love indie publishing all told, you know, so mm-hmm. I'm happy that you're doing it. So you tried for the traditional route and you weren't making much traction. So you decided self-publishing would be the way to go. Is that the way that went?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just so slow. I mean, unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, I finished the book in 2013.
Yeah.
Finished it completely. And then, of course, you go through this ridiculous process of trying to find an agent because, of course, no publisher will talk to you without an agent unless you know somebody.
Right.
And then, of course, you know everything. So it takes 6 months to get an answer, and then they ask for the full manuscript. It takes another 8 months before. It was ridiculous. I was aging. It was ridiculous. So I thought, enough. And, in fact, I did have an agent. Sorry, I should qualify this. I did have a woman who seemed very genuine and very enthusiastic, and we had a relationship, and she was my agent, and we had an agreement signed, and then nothing happened.
Hmm.
Nothing happened. Zero happened, you know, and then a year went by, and I would, of course, because I was cowed, and I thought, oh, I don't want to be pestering her, because, you know, you're cautioned all the time, oh, don't be a pain in the neck, don't bug people, you know, to anxious first-time authors, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, okay. So I would send these emails every few months, hi, anything going on? And in the end, nothing happened. She basically dropped me. We parted company. I don't understand why she lost interest. She never actually said, I don't like you anymore, I don't like your book, I changed my mind. It was just, you know, I don't see this. And it was odd. It was very odd.
Yeah.
So whatever. And so I figured, I can't wait forever. I don't want to go through that again.
No, and, you know, it's weird. I've talked to a lot of agents by now. Mm-hmm. And there's a kind of, some agents are wonderful, open-minded, you know, slightly overworked, largely overworked people, and they, you know, they make good decisions and they make bad decisions, but they, on the whole, they're looking out for the interests of their authors, right? But then there mm-hmm. are those agents who are just, they don't want to deal with you. They want you to bring them a hit. They want you to do all the work. They want you to, you know, sit back and wait for them to call you. And it's interesting when you encounter those people because, you know, we're running a business. Who can run a business on I'll get back to you when I get back to you? That's never going to work for anybody.
Yeah, it didn't work. And you know, it's not that I had unrealistic expectations. You know, when one reaches a certain age, you realize, come on, you're not J.K. Rowling. It's not going to work. It'd be great if you got the book published. Is it going to be a runaway success? What are the odds? You don't think that way. You would just like it to be out in the world. So in the end, you just put it out in the world on your own. You just take ownership of that, and you do it.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done.
Yeah. It's empowering. We live in an empowering age where you can create your own online gardening TV network. You can publish your own book. You can do it all.
Well, I don't know if I can do it all, but you're right. It is empowering. I agree, Kevin. Yeah. And hopefully it's rewarding. I mean, I found it rewarding, somewhat daunting, but also rewarding just the fact that it's out there. I can't wait to hold it in my hand.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
I'm excited for you. I think I'm real weird about indie publishing in general, and I just love the I think I'm a big fan of the entrepreneur attitude, and no one exhibits that better than authors.
Well, sure. I mean, you think about it, it's a solitary occupation. You sit in your room in front of a computer and all of them come up with stuff.
Right.
That is the ultimate in entrepreneurship.
Right. And worse, most authors are introverts, and then they got to go out there and market. So it takes some bravery and courage. So.
Oh, it's exhausting. I am an introvert. I mean, obviously, that's kind of a given. When you're an author, you're an introvert. And it takes everything you got just to get out there and sign it on.
Exactly. So do you have plans for more books?
Oh, yeah. I'm working on a sequel to Design My Life now. It's partway through, and I'm working on several others as well. I have written three other novels prior to this one, but they're in a drawer, and they'll never see the light of day. Novice works, totally different.
Typical author, yeah.
Yeah. You've got to. So, yes, I will be writing, and I will do more books for sure.
Excellent. All right. Are you able to sort of leverage your other work to help boost this up, like to promote it or whatever? Are you going to be able to do that?
I don't see the connection so much, so I'm going to say no to that.
Okay.
But right now the appeal of Hortus TV is for people who love gardening. Now, having said that, if I wrote a gardening-based novel or if I wrote a murder mystery set in a garden, I can see there's a connection there that perhaps I could, but not unless it was a specific connection.
I see. All right. I don't know. I think that people who are watching gardening shows might be interested in this kind of fiction, but you would just have to test it and see, I guess.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm being closed-minded. But it's like, I don't want to sell things to people who aren't necessarily interested. I mean, if I'm eating a nice Thai dinner, I don't want someone coming to me and trying to sell me, a pizza. It's like that. What are you talking about? Leave me alone. I'm watching my gardening shows here.
Right. You got
but
it. Yeah.
I could be wrong. I'm prepared to be wrong. God knows I'm wrong almost every day about something.
Yeah. Welcome to that club. All right. this has been pretty fascinating. For me, it's kind of cool because I do have some experience with the sort of behind the scenes of this world. Nothing quite what you have, anywhere on the level you have, but I've seen enough of it to know that this is probably pretty juicy. So I'm going to have to check out the book when it's available. I can't wait to hear what you're going to come up with next. I think, I can think of several ways to go from this. If it's a hit, I can think of several ways I could go.
From your lips to God's ears. I mean, sure, we can make a TV series. Wouldn't that be fun?
Well, there you go.
Yeah, it'd be so meta, a TV series based on a book about a TV series.
You're right, yeah. I think there is a TV series that's based on behind the scenes of one of the reality shows, like kind of like The Bachelor or something, right?
Yeah, it's called Unreal. It's hilarious.
Yeah. I haven't watched it. My wife's watched it. I have not watched it. I need to check that out, though.
Well, it's very edgy and very real and quite mean, but I think it's fun. I mean, I do hope you read Design My Life, and I hope you laugh.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure.
I hope
will
you find
be reading
it.
yeah, you can count on me reading it. And would have read it already if it had been available. I'm very interested. So, and I like, by the way, I'm looking over your your website, of course, as we talk, and the first paragraph on the book's page ends with the phrase "and exclamation marks," and I think that's hilarious.
Well, there's a short excerpt on my website, lisadrozdov.com, and you can read that, and okay. I'll make sure you get a copy of the book, Kevin.
Oh, so please do. Yeah, I would appreciate that. All right. Well, we're up against time, so we're going to wrap up, but I really appreciate you taking the time to hop in and talk to me, and it's been very enjoyable, and we're going to have to keep in touch. I say this to everybody, but I really do mean it. We need to keep in touch. I want to hear how you're doing. And if
wonderful,
I can help,
Kevin. It was a pleasure talking to you. So yeah, let's keep in touch. You've got my email, right? So
yes, of course, yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
All right. Well, you hang on for just a moment, and for everyone else, you stick around. You're probably hearing some really cool guitar music. That would be my bridge theme. So you stick around, and we'll do a wrap up after this interview, and we'll see you next time. All right, that was my interview with Lisa Drozdov, and I hope you enjoyed that. You know, I worked in TV and for a while there, and I know what she's talking about. There's a kind of interesting, I don't know. There's a weird sort of subculture in the TV industry, in any production industry, anything. As she said, you know, if you're in the public eye, you end up playing a character. I mean, even I'm playing a character. I'm playing the Wordslinger. This is, you know, not the entirety of who I am. I mean, I have. You know, on this show, I try to make, and when I interact with people publicly, I try to make sure that I'm very positive, that I'm very, you know, helpful, that I'm very concerned and caring for everyone. And those are parts of my personality. They really are. But the truth is that I occasionally stub my toe and curse a lot. I occasionally get irritated with people, you know, as I'm driving. I occasionally fail, okay? And so, even though I know that that's not who I really am, and I know that that's not who I really want to be, I occasionally become someone that I don't like that much. And I think everyone does. And I think sometimes we have a habit of allowing that to become our definition of ourselves. And what I want to emphasize, and what I try to emphasize in everything I write and everything I produce, is that despite failures, and despite letting yourself down or letting someone else down, despite whatever bad thing has come out of your life, life is still a choice. You still have this free will. You still have what's the term? An alternative perspective. Okay, you can choose how you look at every single thing that's happening in your life. If you goofed up, if you stubbed your toe, and you yelled at the dog, and you know. Did something you're not proud of. That was that moment. It's past. There's an old saying that you can't step into the same river twice, right? Time just keeps on flowing. Life just keeps on moving. And you stepped into a bad patch there for a second, but then you stepped right out again, right? You're good. You're good. Start right now to be someone better. And when you make a mistake again, start over again. That's what life is. So a series of second chances with every moment, every breath we take. And try to make sure you have more positive breaths than negative breaths, I guess. So anyway, that interview with Lisa was great. I hope you enjoyed that. A great behind the scenes look into you know, reality TV. And sort of what's going on there. I highly recommend picking up her book. I've been reading it. I'm enjoying it. So check that out. You'll find the link to that in the show notes. And I'm not going to keep you much longer. We're almost at an hour, but I do want to, you know, do the regular housekeeping stuff for, you know, all the important stuff. If you have a question for the show, if you have a question for one of my guests, if you just, you know, want to chat, you can give me a call, 281-809-WORD, that's 281-809-9673, where you can leave a voicemail. If I'm not online, I guess, I've discovered that if I am online on Skype, the calls don't go through. They don't go to voicemail. Weird. Sorry about that, but I'm not on Skype very often. I usually only use it for interviews and whatever. we're working on all kinds of solutions here. But give me a call anyway. And you can also leave me a voicemail from wordslingerpodcast.com. There's a little tab that floats on the right-hand side of the screen. You can click on that, and it'll allow you to leave a voicemail that I, you know, I'll be alerted over that via email. You can also click on the contact button there and send me a message. I've gotten several this week, and I'm very happy. Thank you so much to those of you who have reached out. I really appreciate it. Your support and your kind words, that's yeah, that keeps me going. I'm going to be honest with you. I love hearing it. And people are really responding to some of the guests. Just very, very cool. At any rate, thanks so much for tuning in this week. And I'm going to I'll be back. I am going to be at the San Francisco Writers Conference, though, next week. So there likely will not be an episode unless I can figure out a way to work it in between now and then. If you are going to be at the conference, definitely look me up, hit me up. I'll be around, and if you are a registered guest of the conference, you can actually look on the schedule. You'll see which panels I'm going to be on. I'm mostly talking on Thursday and Saturday evenings or afternoons. It'll be evenings for me. I'm going to have a rough time because I'm losing 2 hours by flying there from Houston. So, at any rate, thanks so much for tuning in. I appreciate everything you're doing. As always, if you want to support the show, go look me up on iTunes, rate and rank the show, leave me a review there. That is very helpful. You can do that on Stitcher. You can also do that on Google Play and all the places online where fine podcasts are found. I definitely appreciate that. And if you'd like to support the show financially, of course, you can do that too. If you go to Patreon, actually go to wordslingerpodcast.com, click on the Patreon logo on the homepage, or click on Patreon in the menu, and just, a dollar, a couple of dollars, $10, whatever you feel is a good contribution to help keep the show going and reaching more people, I'll gladly accept that. Thank you so much to all my patrons out there. You're helping. I mean, you know, it's every little bit helps. I mean, sometimes it doesn't seem like that's the case, but every drop helps fill the bucket, and, that money gets used, I promise you, it gets used exclusively for furthering the mission of the show, which is to help me craft good stories that serve, here's my goal. This is my mission. Craft good stories that serve God and serve others and tend to my flock. In my flock, that's my readers, that's my listeners, that's my indie author pals. Those are the people that I've volunteered to help, in any way I can. To lead if I need to serve if I need to, and I do, everyone does, but that's what I'm about, and that's what this show's about. So your dollars help. Every dollar helps. So thanks so much for being supportive of me and the show and those who are gaining from it, and I will see you all next week. Well, I'll see you all soon. I'm hoping next week. See you in San Francisco. God bless. Talk to you soon.